Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today we're interviewing Grandmaster Flash. I called them the Black Militia. They were recently in Brunswick, Georgia. They had the right to be there, peaceful protest. I like to interview this. I wanted to interview them because they're such a great force to see. They were armed, but they had permits. They have the right to march and protest. So I'm looking forward to interviewing Grandmaster Flash, the original Grandmaster Flash. Hopefully he'll call in soon. In the meantime, we're going to listen to some music.
Nothing else matters. In fact, I want you to find yourself right in the holy of holies. I'm really thankful. While I'm there thanking him, I know that I have a right. Whatever I need, I believe tonight somebody just wants him to open up the windows of heaven for you. Let it rain. Send down your blessings, Lord. I just need you to move in this place tonight. I just need you to move in this place. He's doing it right now. Open the broad gates of heaven, let it rain, let it rain, open the broad gates of heaven.
Thank you.
Hello, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. Today the interview is with the original Grandmaster Jay. How you doing, sir?
Grand Light, how are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm glad you got a chance to call in.
Well, I am always trying to make time to talk to folks that want to talk to me, so I hope that we can spend some time together and maybe build for a little bit. I know I have a lot on my plate, but never too much on my plate to stop and talk to my brothers and sisters.
Now, I first learned about you through a friend of mine, Pamela Baker. She sent me your video, your June 17th video that's on YouTube, June 17th, 2020. And I saw that when I saw the one where you were in Brunswick, Georgia, and I saw it on the television on YouTube on different media channels. Now, my understanding is that you are registering people to vote, not vote, but to get permits to carry guns. Am I correct?
No, that's not our focus at all. And anybody who thinks that would be sadly mistaken. Our focus was the need to form a black militia in this country to combat the rising stem of violence against us and to arm all of ourselves legally. If you can't be armed legally according to the Constitution, then that's fine. Do so. But our goal was to form a militia, the same way white folks form militias, so-called, to stand up for their heritage. We have the right also in this country to form our own militia. And up to this point, there are gun clubs. Yes, there are people who get together and talk about how to properly be a good gun owner. But a militia that can stand and fight, no, nothing like that existed. So we created the NFAC. And that's what you saw manifested in Brunswick, Georgia. That's what you saw manifested in Dayton, Ohio. We are a militia. It is not our goal to try to do anything other than that. The rest of it falls in behind that. Anyone who wants to become a member, we will assist you with getting your rights restored if that's what it takes for you to become a legal gun owner because you lose that under felony convictions. Or if you're unaware of what you can and can't do as far as a gun owner. As a member of the NFAC, we bring you into focus with that.
Yes, sir. You need to come to Georgia. To Florida. You need to come to Florida because felons just recently got the right to vote last October and November. You need to come here because there's a lot of people who couldn't vote are on guns.
You have to understand something about each state. Each state has modified their gun laws based on the racial climate of that state. Prime example is California, where even though the Constitution says you have the right to bear arms, California does not allow open carry because of what the Black Panthers did back in 1966 when they went to the state capitol with guns. They immediately passed a law that says nobody in the entire state can open carry. The same way Florida. Florida has some rather interesting gun laws also. There are two types of states. There are states that have what we call constitution carry, where you can pull a weapon out, carry it, nobody's going to bother you. It's like the Wild Wild West. Then you have states where they put all these safeguards in place. They say they do it in the name of gun control, but the truth of the matter is to keep people like us from easily obtaining weapons to defend ourselves. In other words,
yes,
it ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun.
Right. I've always said if you take the Ku Klux Klan guns away, watch and learn. I like what you're doing. The black militia, you're the leader of it. I love what you're doing. It's not often that I see black men carrying guns and protesting. where I live at. So
let me speak on that real quick. First of all, the two don't go together. And we've said that. Bringing guns to a protest, unless you anticipate there's going to be some violence that you're prepared to respond to, then bringing guns to a protest does nothing but agitate the situation. The purpose of a protest is just to raise awareness. It's not to fight. It's not to settle anything. So when I see people protesting, while I respect the fact that people want to get in the streets and make noise and bring awareness to the situation, I'm going to be honest. Most of y'all ain't going to bust a grape in a fruit fight. So having guns there that you're really not prepared to use, that you just got for show, that's a waste of time to me. So when I see people who have guns at a protest, if they're protecting the protesters, I'm all for that. You know what I mean? I'm all for that. Have your guns out there, but you got to remember, you're not a part of the protest. You're there to protect the protest. And just like what happened in Atlanta a few weeks ago when they had the protest and there was these fake Black Panther actors dressed up as if they were Black Panthers, but they were really paid Hollywood actors, gave themselves away by the things that they did that those of us who are in any type of organization would have never done. We're not joining hands with people. We're not locking arms. We're not skipping down the road like we're going to see the wizard while we're wearing weapons. The weapons are a tool, and you don't pull those tools out unless you're prepared to use them. So those two do not go together.
Let me add something else to you.
And all of those people who are not prepared or don't have the backbone to do anything are the first ones that want to scream, well, why aren't you here and why aren't you there? What they fail to realize is what we've shown you is the blueprint of what you need to do. We're not here to save the world. We all have to save the world. So when we went to Brunswick in response to Ahmaud Arbery, it was to show America, going forward, this is how you should respond. Forget the singing. Forget the sign waving. It doesn't work. Bring out the guns, and you'll see how fast you'll get results. So we set an example. One who's sitting back saying, well, you know, we didn't see you guys here, and we didn't see you guys there. I didn't see you either. So please stop asking us to do something that you don't have the backbone to do yourself.
Yes, sir. I understand exactly what you're saying. And you're right about it. So the Black militia, how long have you been around? How long have you been the leader, and how did this organization start?
Well, I think that's the thing that has everybody upset and also amazed, is because they did not know that we existed. I have to explain it to you like this. It's not a matter of how long. We don't give up that information because the enemy is always trying to figure us out. We move different. We are different. But here's what people don't understand. Whenever there's civil unrest, there are four levels of response. And most of you all have only seen the three, and they go like this. The first level are the kids in the streets throwing rocks. And, you know, those are the people that tear up some stuff. Okay, they want to tear up some stuff. They want to break some stuff because they're frustrated. They're not organized, but they're angry. There's nothing wrong with that. And then you get the second group. The second group is what we call the protesters. That's the big mobs that come out and just they want to walk around, just be seen, and they want to show that they're upset about the situation too. And then the next wave are the looters. These are people who just want to get some because it's time to get some. It ain't got nothing to do with the protest. That's the next wave. And that's normally where it dies down, because at that point they'll call out the National Guard or somebody to calm everybody down. But there's a fourth level that most people don't even know exists, and that consists of your ex-military types, your vets, people that are probably a lot more well-equipped to deal with the situation but not as hot-headed. When it gets to us and we show our face, that's when there's a real problem, because it's going to be organized warfare. It's going to be guerrilla warfare. It's not going to be rock throwing in the street. It's going to be something that it'll take up some time to deal with. So what happened was the Ahmaud Arbery took us all the way to level four. Folks like us have always existed. There have always been folks that are prepared to go to war for real in this country that are Black. And the fact that we've gotten organized into a coalition and we finally are starting to show ourselves, it scares some people because they've been talking about it for so long. But to see it actually happening, it gives hope to some people. but it also scares other people. Because remember this, as long as they never fix the problem, some people have a reason to exist. But should we fix the problem, they won't have a purpose. That's why we have a lot of our own that work against us. The NFAC is now 25,000 strong. And a lot of that came out of Brunswick after they saw that there was some place for them to go and join and use the services that were taught to them by the U.S. government. The U.S. government trained us. The U.S. government equipped us. The U.S. government gave us all of the know-how that we didn't have. You combine that with our black ancestral warrior spirit, and now you have level four.
Okay. So would you like to tell people what NFAC stands for? Because, I mean, you blew up the internet and a lot of television channels when you went to Brunswick, Georgia. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm one of them people that you give hope to.
You know, what's funny about that whole Brunswick situation was, and I have a saying, we don't jump in front of cameras. Cameras jumped in front of us.
Yes,
we did not go there to be seen. But they saw us because they saw something they had never seen before. They saw armed black citizens that even the police would not engage. And they had never seen anything like that. And even the law enforcement had never seen anything like that. So you can imagine my surprise when I began to see video clips, when I began to have people calling me saying, I know you, so I know that was you under the mask. When I said I'm going to run through the neighborhood and think they'll shoot me, I was dead serious because I believe that racists pick on soft targets. They never want to engage someone that can return equal firepower or maybe more of a lethal enemy, no matter what color it is. I call a lot of them are cowards. I don't care what type of video they put out or how much they parade around. They don't really want to go to war with someone that's prepared to go to war with them. So I didn't think about that when I was there. I didn't see the cameras. I didn't care about cameras. I didn't care about TV appearances. As a matter of fact, when it all blew up, you remember I was wearing a mask. But at the end of the day, it was very easy for people to put two and two together, and it was time that the NFAC was revealed to the world.
Okay. So, are you affiliated with the Black Panthers in any way?
You have to understand, a lot of people, when you say Black Panthers, you have to understand when you say Black Panthers. Now, the original Black Panthers have already come out and said that I represent them to the closest based on their 10-point step program and the fact that we don't allow anyone of any other race to participate in what we do, period. Then you have other offshoots of the Black Panthers, like the New Black Panthers, which are not associated with the original Black Panthers. As a matter of fact, they've gone to court so that they cannot use their name. And then we have all these other folks that are running around calling themselves Black Panthers, but are not really even acting on the tenets of the Black Panthers. The NFAC is a coalition, which means that we are many organizations into one. We align ourselves with the original Black Panthers, not these offshoots that think that you can plug white people into the organization. As a matter of fact, Kevin Herr, who's one of the original Black Panther members, said, and I quote, "You all are dangerous to the legacy and our history. Only the NFAC reflects the tenets and the qualities of the original Black Panthers." So we may partner with them, but we are not solely part of them.
Okay. All right. So I would have to ask, how do you, it may sound like a silly question, a stupid question, but how do you feel about the killing of black men and women at the hands of policemen?
I have been a spokesperson.
Are in handcuffs. They're cowards. Kill them that way.
You have to understand something. I have been an advocate against police brutality for almost 8 years. I'm not new to this. That's one of the reasons why we adopted the NFAC and left movements alone that talk about it and do nothing about it. In the book Policing the Black Man by Angie Davis, and also in the book Brainwashed by Tom Burrell, it speaks of the origins of policing in this country and why it is so detrimental. to black people. It doesn't matter whether or not they're handcuffed or running down the street. It is the core solution that when you look at where the police came from, the slave patrol, that is now running around enacting the same practices, then why are we acting surprised? I don't have to have an opinion on something that I'm a part of. I am a black man. And anybody else who's never had to walk in our shoes doesn't know what it feels like to have an encounter with the slave patrol. So as far as the brutality that we're seeing today, I talked about that 5 years ago when I was standing with President Obama. I talked about that when I was on the bridge to peace in South Carolina with 33,000 people. I've been a part of all of these major police shootings, and in the last 5 to 6 years, nothing has changed. And the reason nothing has changed is because we haven't done anything but talk about it. We have not done eye for an eye. We have not held the police accountable. We keep relying on their system to try to fix them, and it doesn't work that way. Well, now maybe folks will get the picture, because now everybody sees around the world that policing in its current model is not policing at all. It doesn't serve and protect or enforce anything. It is a Praetorian guard for the folks who put laws over us to keep us oppressed. And anyone who can't see that is a part of the problem. So as far as police brutality, I don't blame the police. The police are a symptom of a bigger problem, and that is the white superiority, white inferiority complex that they have, that is this country is built on, and that what they've built around the world. That's why the core of this, the KKK and white supremacists, is the animal that nobody wants to take on. So that's who we went after in Brunswick. We didn't go after the police because the police didn't kill Ahmaud Arbery. Racist white people did. It wasn't the police that killed George Floyd. It was racist white people that did. All these people that's getting lynched that they're finding, they're not getting killed by whoever. They're getting killed by racist white people. So when y'all ready to deal with racist white people and stop splitting hairs and stop pointing fingers at the police and other people, we can get down to business.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying it's not the police. It's racist white people doing it. Okay.
You simplified. Not police are a symptom. They're an arm of the octopus. The police are the Praetorian guard. They are the arm that's most visible. But just remember, racism is systemic. So it's built into institutions. It's built into banking. It's built into schooling. It's built into housing laws. It's built into politics. The police is just the part that you see. But they're all arms of the same octopus.
Right. So, do you have organizations in all 50 states?
I decline to answer that question. We don't give out our information on our structure to the public.
Okay, I'm sorry for asking that. So, why do you call yourself the original gay master?
Then you don't know my history, because anyone who knows me knows that activism was always secondary to me. Hip-hop music has always been my love for the last 37, almost 40 years now. And anybody who needs to brush up on their hip-hop history, please do. But don't go on the internet, because I go back beyond that, before that. So my name is musical. What I'm doing now for my people, the two have nothing to do with each other. It is a name that is recognizable, but it has no way anything we're doing right now. But if you go back and research music, that's another interview for another time that would take a very long time.
I know Ron DMC, the SJ is deceased, if I'm not mistaken.
You're putting two people together, because you're not listening to what I just told you. Go back and do your research. Jason Mazel, who was Jam Master J, was the DJ for Run DMC, who died back in the early 2000s. That man has been gone for a while. Rest in peace. But when people hear the name Grandmaster J, if you don't know your history, you automatically default to Run DMC. The same way if you hear Jazzy Jeff, you think of the Fresh Prince. You ignore Jazzy Jeff from the Funky Four plus one more. If you hear Cash Money, you think of Baby and all of those guys. You totally ignore Cash Money. for Philadelphia. You have to know your hip-hop history to know that before hip-hop was commercialized, a lot of us already existed. So that's why I don't entertain that conversation, because unless you have an in-depth knowledge of hip-hop and can't see past Run DMC, you can't talk to me.
Okay. All right. I understand what you're saying. So basically, the militia is basically there to protect the protesters. And you within your rights, of course. I'm sure you know all your rights in each state that you go into. You're very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you're very intelligent because I've seen your videos. So I know that you definitely know your rights, which is a great thing. They can't railroad you because you already know your rights.
I think that you'll find that when people start seeing, as you say, people who know their rights, then if that individual doesn't share the information with the other folks, then, you know, it's no good. One of my missions and one of the missions of the NFAC is to educate our people on our rights, not our Miranda rights, which came out of a Supreme Court decision, but our actual rights under the Constitution. If you understand those rights, then you have no problem facing off with law enforcement. You have no problem facing off with civilians who don't understand the law. I'll give you a prime example. If I'm walking down the street with an AR-15 strapped over my back and the police approach me, I already know what the laws are. But if the guy who called in doesn't know the law, you know, the civilian, I just saw a guy with a gun, I don't know what's going on, then you are letting us know that you don't understand that that man has a right to do that. Though you may not be comfortable with it. Just because you're uncomfortable doesn't make it right. So it is always our position that if someone appears to not understand their rights when it comes to weapons, then we will try to help you understand that. But you've got to get over your own ignorance and fear on your own. And that's really where a lot of this comes from. Think about it. Most of the high-profile shootings or high-profile situations with the police always starts with somebody making a phone call who doesn't understand people's constitutional rights.
Yes.
That's how it always starts.
So
fearing of the Constitution is the real problem. You see, the cops are just robots. They're dumb. They respond to information they're given. That's how the system works. But it has to start with whoever initiated the process. And they never want to bring that up. I believe that we should have a law in this country that if you make one of those phone calls and it turns out badly and it turns out it was based on information you gave, then you should have to be found just as guilty as the people who committed the crime.
Yes, 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 I agree with you. Yes, because the people making them phone calls are the reason some of those people are dead. A great majority of them are dead.
Right.
Someone calls
because
a false report.
Right. And you have to also remember, too, there are some people who give these reports knowing that it's false information because they want to see something happen to that black man or that black woman. You understand what I'm saying? They pick up the phone and exaggerate. I'll give you an example. When we pulled up to the McMichael's house in Brunswick, Georgia. And we were all getting out of our vehicles. We were just getting out of the vehicles. I was one of the first people out of the vehicle. I noticed that there was a white woman who was standing across the street in her yard looking at us, an older white woman. And her husband came outside, too. And she was staring at us with these hateful eyes. And we were putting our stuff on and getting ready to go and, you know, find out if the McMichael's was home or anybody was home. We didn't give a damn who was there. But at the end of the day, I looked right at her, and I said to the guys, she's calling the police. And you could tell by the look on her face that whatever she was going to tell them wasn't going to be a look of concern that she needed to be protected. She saw a bunch of, pardon my language, N-words there, and she was going to make sure that the folks came and took care of her. Now, I don't know what she told them, but when they came around that corner and what they were told did not match what they saw, the same principle that gets us shot by the police because someone gives us false information, the police saw the shoe on the other foot because they said, OMG, these people will kill us, and they look like they can kill us, and they look like our guns won't stop them, and they look like they have more firepower. In other words, they got set up. But it was the lady who called who set the whole thing in motion. You understand what I'm saying? So people who make these phone calls, they have a bias, okay? They have a bias. The same way people will sit there and listen to somebody scream for help and nobody want to go outside and help. Most of the people who call are cowards, because if I have a problem in my neighborhood, I probably going to go outside and try to deal with it before I call somebody who doesn't live in my neighborhood to come down here, unless I know for a fact that it's going to end up getting that person hurt. So I think those people should be held liable.
Yes. Yes. You are right. You are right. And those are false reports, too.
Mm-hmm.
If it turns out they didn't have a gun, like they said, or they didn't, like in the case of Michael Brown Jr., they never did prove that he stole a pack of cigarettes. They never proved.
And here's the part that really, here's the part. The police, this is the problem with policing. The police will just take you at your word. They will take you at your word. They will be, okay, well, thank you for calling, and hang up. You know, I believe, I'll give you another thing, that, and we've talked about this, is that we believe that 911 should become a visual system. It should never be a vocal system. If you dial 911, we see who made the call. You understand what I'm saying? You dial 911, we get it. You understand what I mean? No more just anonymous calling in behind the scenes. Don't nobody know who it is. Just a voice on the phone. You know what I mean? We should have, we can all get on, we can do video calls any other time. We can get on Facebook and live stream and YouTube and all this. You mean to tell me we can't put a system together that if somebody dials 911 that we can't see who it is? I'm just trying to show you how we have to combat bias.
Yes, that's what I've been saying for a while. Somebody has to call the police there. Someone has to call the police in a majority of those cases that have got the media's attention and got world-class attention, like Mr. George Floyd and Mr. Ahmaud Arbery. Except for Mr. Ahmaud Arbery, they didn't call the police. We did call the police. Yeah, he did call the police. The retired man that was law enforcement. He did call the police.
You know, I want everybody to stop that. Stop calling these racist ass white people retired. What they did in their job means nothing to what they was at the time. You were a private citizen in your home. You took it upon yourself to take a gun and a truck and chase somebody down, and you killed them. We don't care what you did. What you did is you are not what you do. You are who you are. So I'm pretty sure if somebody be like, well, you know the retired bus driver, don't nobody give a damn about them being above what they used to be. And he was not retired anything. He was a white man, a racist white man who was a member of the local Ku Klux Klan who decided to hunt down this black boy and kill him, period. But they don't want us to say that because, see, that changes the narrative because it pisses us off at all white people. So white people like to try to label you by what you do as if that separates you, because then they can point the finger and say, oh, he's just a bad apple. No, there ain't no bad apple when the whole tree is rotten. And that's where the KKK nepotism comes in, because they didn't call the police. They called their friends to try to cover it up, and their friends did it for them.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. You said it 100% right. But people don't speak that way. You do. Most people don't speak that way. I say it like that. So,
when you've been on earth as long as I have and seen as much as I've seen, you call it like you see it.
You don't look old at all. You don't look elderly or old at all. You look to be about 35.
I am walking melanin. Okay?
Okay.
I am living melanin. Okay, stay with your brother here. I'm walking melon. All right.
Okay.
But when I tell people that I've seen the violence of the 60s, that I witnessed the black power of the 70s, that I watched the birth of hip hop in the 80s, when I said I saw the rise of crack in the late 80s and the gangster rap in the 90s, and 9/11 in the 2000s, and now we're in the 2020s. I've seen it all up close and personal. So I know what it looks like. And when all of this lynching and all of this shooting and all of this stuff started to make a strong comeback, those of us who remember don't have to wait for the whole picture to come out before we say, oh, to hell to the no, they're not going to do that again. Because we've seen it before. But thank you for the compliment. I'm glad you said 35. Because when I go into the store and they ID me, I just stop smiling. You know what I'm saying? It's living melanin. And plus it's eating right and making sure that you stop eating what the master told you to eat and eat what Yah told you to eat. You know I got to give some praise to the Most High while I'm on the show.
Yes, the Most High, yes. Yes. So do you believe I'm almost certain you do, that black people should defend themselves? Because some black people have said to me that they're afraid of death row if they defend themselves against a white person.
I don't think you can simplify crime along racial lines. I believe that yes, collectively, we as black people need to defend ourselves. I'm not saying anything new. Malcolm X said it best. It is only intelligent for black people to defend themselves when they are the continued victims of the human rights violations that we witness in this country and that are a victim of. It is only intelligent to defend yourself. So it's not a question as to whether or not black people should defend themselves. Yes, they should. But when we start talking about the commissions of crimes, it takes on a completely different light because, again, you're working inside of a system that was designed to put you right back where you came from. We came out of slavery. And when we came out of slavery, they put us out of slavery with a loophole. And that loophole was very simple. Let no man be a slave, lest he be a criminal. So, of course, it's always going to be in the best interest of the very people who felt like they lost so much when we were freed to turn around and become the purveyors to put us back into the criminal justice system. So, of course, you're going to see blacks and you're going to see them disproportionately sentenced. One young man may get 6 months, but the brother got 26 years. They're putting you back in slavery. Death row, on the other hand, is, of course, the most egregious punishment because now what you're saying is we want to practice eye for an eye. It's unbalanced. What about all of the things that are done to us that are done in the name of hate where we don't see that same type of justice being administered? Not only should black people defend themselves, but black people should have their own court system where it is ran by us, by our peers. So now we're putting ourselves in the hands of our enemies, and then we have the nerve to cry about how the punishment is meted out? No. That's another thing that needs to change, and it's changing today.
Yes, sir. It is. Things are changing. Bit by bit, it's changing. President Barack Obama seemed to bring out the worst in the racist white people. The very worst. I believe they've always killed black people. I believe the internet plays a great part in what that people know about the killing. Before it was just within those towns or cities, but now with the internet, you can't help but know. And the 24-hour news media, CNN, MSNBC. CBS even, you can't help but know. And people can't look the other way. It's everywhere. So we as a race of people have to really come together. Do you agree?
I agree with several things. First, as I said before, I've been involved in this for quite a few years. I remember when President Obama and I were together in Charleston, South Carolina, for the funeral of Senator Pinckney, and the very brief conversation I had with the president concerned police reform, judicial reform, and the establishment of a federal agency to help combat some of these what you call hidden cases and so forth. However, in the years that have passed, as I've said, there's been a lot of lip service paid to this issue, but no traction. No one has actually done anything. I do believe that because we live in a more technologically connected society, you're right, we've got cell phones now, and people can stream, all of these things, which is showing us that this is not something new, it's just being exposed. And it's gotten exposed to the point where it's reached such a high level of visibility that police are quitting because they know what they do. They know what they really do. Again, those of us who don't study our history are rather ignorant to the fact that the police have never been there to protect us. They've only been there to incarcerate us, abuse us, and kill us. That was their purpose. That's why they always tell you. That's why they always tell you what we did was in keeping with our policy. But they never tell you what the policy is. They just said that they didn't break any rules, but they never tell you what the rules are. Most people make the assumption that those rules must be for our general welfare and our well-being. They are not. And when you go out and you study this, you're shocked to find out that they're doing exactly what they've been empowered to do. You're the one that has a problem with it because you don't know what the policy is. So I would say whether or not I agree is really irrelevant. It's the fact that the model of policing must come to an end. We have to move to another model of policing, whether that's self-policing or what we call localized policing. Because right now you have what's called remote policing. That means someone outside of your community monitors your community and then sends people into your community to try to regulate you. That does not work.
I don't believe there should be white cops. White policemen or Puerto Rican, Mexican cops in black neighborhoods, black cities, black counties.
You're missing the point. You still missed the point. No, it doesn't make a difference what their nationality is. The structure itself is the problem. In other words, when I was growing up, we had our own internal police departments in the black neighborhood, and the white police officers used to have to come to the black neighborhood police department to ask for people. They couldn't go get anyone. They couldn't come into our neighborhoods. They can't do that. What we have to do is move back to a model where it's self-policing. If you didn't grow up in this neighborhood, you cannot police this neighborhood, period. And every other race can do what they want to do. I'm only concerned about black folks because we're a special group. We have to stop lumping ourselves in with everybody else. Nobody else was enslaved like we was. Nobody else helped build this country and has been denied what's owed to them like we are. Nobody else is still being treated as secondhand citizens and being denied some of the opportunities that we are. But every time we try to get something, everybody else wants to piggyback on board. That's why I don't want to hear black and people of color. If you can't just deal with black folks and our problems and the issues that we have, instead of treating us like we're somebody else, part of my language, I don't give a damn what other races do.
I understand. I understand exactly what you're saying. Okay. The show is about to end. I thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler. I hope that did not offend you in any way and that you will come back on.
My sister, I love you, and I love all my people. Nothing you said to me makes me offended. My anger is directed at those that continue to deny us. My anger is directed at those who keep paying us lip service. Sisters like yourself that have these painful discussions are the people that I praise, that I love to death. I want you to keep doing what you're doing. You family, all you got to do is reach out to me, and Big Brother will be happy to come and sit on the couch with you, and we can tell them what it is. So, no, it's a good discussion because some people need to hear this. It's painful for some people to hear what we just talked about. You know what I mean? So no. You are the spotlight, and I am in the spotlight. So no, there's never any offense taken. Ask me the hard questions, because somebody out there needs to hear the answer. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes, I do. Thank you. And thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Butler. And I look forward to talking to you real soon. And don't forget, Black Formation, Black Guns Formation, Atlanta, Georgia, and Phoenix, Arizona, July the 4th. You have a blessed day, my sister. And thank you very much.
You too, sir.
Shalom.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. That was Grandmaster Jay. He's been on Show Talk with Angela Butler, learned a lot. Great man. Great man. That's all I can say. Great man. Intelligent. He's very intelligent, too. And it shows in the way he talks. Well, all right, everyone, you listen to this show, give me some feedback. Let me know what you think about it. My email is AngelaButlerShow@gmail.com. My Facebook is, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, on iHeartRadio, YouTube, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker. Hit me up. All right, everyone, thank you for listening. This show is pre-recorded. All right.